Welcome back to another episode of Harry's Take. Today, I am thrilled to welcome a true legend in sports journalism, Leslie Visser. With a groundbreaking career that spans five decades, Leslie has shattered barriers as the first woman to take on many iconic sports broadcasting roles, including covering the Super Bowl, the Final Four, the NBA Finals, the World Series, and much more. Leslie has also been inducted into the International Sports Hall of Fame in 2020, as well as the National Sportscasters and Sports Writers Association's Hall of Fame in 2015, and has won many other awards. She is renowned not only for her achievements, but also for her trailblazing spirit and sense of humor, which has inspired countless women in sports broadcasting. Let's dive into her incredible journey and the impact she's made on the industry. Welcome, Leslie.
Hey, Harry. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. So my first question for you today is, how has the industry changed since you first got started, in your opinion?
Oh, that's a great question. Well, I will tell you, when I started, I wrote for the Boston Globe, and they made me the first woman to cover the NFL as a beat. And the credentials that I wore to the game said, no women or children in the press box. So that's quite a different change. You see thousands of women now, which I'm really grateful for. I mean, they didn't even have a ladies' room when I started because they'd never had women.
Wow. That's great to see the progress.
Tremendous. I love now that women can, a woman, young woman or older woman can do whatever she wants to do. She could be a reporter either in print or TV or digital or have a podcast. She can aspire to be in the booth, on the field, behind the typewriter or, well, I grew up with typewriters.
Maybe computer.
Behind the keyboard.
Yeah. My next question is, I know you've covered a wide variety of events, some of which I mentioned in the introduction, but how would you prepare differently if it was the World Series versus the Super Bowl or the Final Four? Was your preparation any different for a different sports and events?
Yeah, I think, well, some aspects of it are fundamental. It's always a story. I mean, sports is storytelling, which is as old as time. And the other is you just have to really be familiar with what you're looking at. I always say that one of the non-negotiables for people wanting to go in this business is they have to have knowledge, because knowledge gives you confidence. So, I mean, you should know if you're covering baseball, you know, would it be great now to move the runner over? If you're covering basketball, is it a zone? Is it man-to-man? If you're covering the NFL or any level of football, you know, what are they doing? You're a linebacker yourself. I don't know if you played in a 3-4 or a 4-3, but anybody wanting to go in this business should be able to recognize the difference.
Yeah, that's certainly true. Yeah, we probably did like a 4-3 at times, 3-4, depends on the opponent. But it's great that you were able to have such a vast range of events in sports and that your knowledge spans over so many events. That's really impressive.
Well, you know what's interesting is I had a passion for all sports. I think I always say that sports is the greatest meritocracy because it doesn't matter. And you have one of the most fabulous mothers in history, but it doesn't matter where she went to college or how much money your father earns. You know, if you hit the jumper, if you sink the putt, that's on you, Harry. If you make the tackle, if you recover the fumble. And, you know, that's what I love about sports. I mean, it finally made room for women. But it is inherently a great meritocracy.
Well, that's certainly true. Anyone from any background can become a star in their own right in any sport. I think it's interesting that you had a passion for all sports because football is my number one sport in watching and playing. But I think as I move further in my studies about journalism, I need to broaden my repertoire to cover a lot of sports because the greats like yourself they go from event to event. It doesn't matter if they have a favorite sport or not. So that's a great piece of advice to take.
And just know that at its root, it's all competition. So that's really what you love about it. I mean, what you love is who will do what. And unlike Hollywood, it's unscripted, which I love that aspect of sports. It's out there and no place to hide. And as journalists, we get to watch it. And you're right about going from one sport to the next. I mean, I had decades of going from the NFL right into the NCAA, well, the NBA, some of the NBA, then the NCAA tournament, then the NBA playoffs. And I remember once I had to go from doing a golf event in LA to the world figure skating in St. Petersburg, Russia. So, I mean, not only, you know, the preparation for both those events was different, plus the clothes I had to bring were different. But, you know, as I was saying, it's the ultimate passport being a journalist.
Wow, that's crazy. That's a huge jump in scenery. It's great that you're able to pivot so quickly. It's a great skill.
Yeah, I have. I mean, there's almost nothing I haven't covered in the Boston Globe. I hate to invoke the Yankees because I'm a child of the Red Sox, but we were the 27 Yankees. Our baseball writer was Peter Gammons, considered the greatest of all time. The basketball was Bob Ryan, who his nickname is the Commissioner. Our tennis writer is Bud Collins, who actually taught America how to watch tennis. And our football was Will McDonough, who was renowned still to this day. Everybody who covers football wants to be Will McDonough. So it was a lot of pressure on me at a young age, but I loved it.
That's great. My next question is, I know there's since you've been in the industry, there's been a lot of changes to the way that people access games. For example, in the NFL these days, they have games on Prime on Thursdays. They have Netflix games they had on Christmas. They're doing Peacock, like all these different services that are fundamentally not cable television. So I wanted to get your insight on what is the adding of more games to different services? How does that affect the broadcast industry?
It offered a lot more jobs. I mean, when I started, there were, you know, I was the first woman on Monday Night Football. There were three people on that broadcast, you know, and that was it on Monday night. Now it can be streamed. The great Al Michaels went to Amazon. And, you know, pretty soon, I think you'll see a league or some form of a league in Europe. I mean, Jacksonville has played in London now for 15 years. And, you know, the NFL wants to embrace any revenue stream that it can. And I'll just tell you how different when you talked about the access, not just for the consumer, but for what you may want to do, which would be to be a reporter or journalist. When I started covering the NFL in the early mid 70s, we used to travel with the team. And I can remember one time the Patriots were playing Tampa. They'd already made the playoffs. And a great tight end named Russ Francis brought his guitar on the plane. And he and I went and sat on the beach in Tampa because he wasn't going to play. So, and he was from Hawaii, so he played Hawaiian songs on his guitar. I mean, could you imagine that now? That, you know, half the time you can't get near the players.
Wow, that's a great story. Yeah, now they just have interviews on like Fridays and Thursdays. It's cool to hear that they had these more intimate journeys with the players and teams back then.
Yeah, there was just a lot more access because there wasn't social media. So that what you did with them, I remember going horseback riding with Emmett Smith and bowling with Jerome Bettis, but there wasn't 5,000, you know, journalist citizens recording it while we were at the bowling alley. So I think that's why the access is tougher now, but it doesn't mean you can't work around it. And it's really important to get to know the people. You eventually want to get their phone numbers. They need to have trust in you that, you know, you're not going to blast something out. So I think you spoke to Tracy Wolfson, my great colleague.
Yeah, I was going to mention that later, but.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's renowned and beloved by the players and respected, which is the most important. But that's, I think, the kind of career that any young person should want to have.
Yeah, it's great the way that you and her both the players, when you are interviewing and she's interviewing them, they're excited about it and they love to do it and they know she's the one that's going to do it and they're excited about it. It's great to see from the viewer standpoint.
Yeah, I think it comes through the ones for male or female. I think the ones that you think you'd like off camera, you would like. The camera eventually reveals who you are. So she's fantastic. Actually, we have great Amanda Balionis is our golf, and you could tell all the players are really comfortable with her. And we have an all-women show at CBS that has Swin Cash, who's an executive with the Pelicans, and of course the great Lisa Leslie, Dara Torres, and Summer Sander, you know, Olympic swimmers. So I've been at CBS now, I think about 35 years. So I've seen a lot of people come and go, but the women are great.
Yeah, it's a great network. Probably my favorite. I'm an AFC guy, you know that. So big CBS fan over here. But
well, I have to say, when I started, CBS was the NFC, and so that's why I did all the Madden Summer All games. And the NFC East was great then. I mean, the Giants were great. They had Lawrence Taylor, of course. The Cowboys were great with Troy Aikman and that whole class, and the Redskins won a couple Super Bowls. Oh, then Redskins,
yeah,
won a couple Super Bowls, and Philly even jumped up. But please don't, Harry. Are you a Jets fan?
No, I'm actually a Chiefs fan.
Okay, well, kind of a front runner there, but okay.
No, not a bandwagon though. Since the Alex Smith days and Jamal Charles before Mahomes.
Oh yeah,
since a young age.
Great story. Yeah, they've always been a class act. Lamar Hunt, of course, the original owner, moved the team from Dallas just so that the NFL could thrive in two cities, Kansas City and Dallas, which already had a team. So, yeah, it's got a great legacy. Hank Stram worked with him 1,000 years ago. So, good team there.
It's a great organization. The Hunt family is great. I go to the playoffs at Arrowhead every year with my dad, and like, The Huntster, they just walk around the concourse and stadium like they're just part of it, because that's just the feel you get from the organization. Like, I just saw them walking around the parking lot, and it felt like so cool just to be able to see them not like protected and like getting chauffeured into his suite, you know.
Well, you know, the teams do have cultures, and I've been privileged that I started covering the NFL in the 70s. So I got to see, you know, the Steelers and then the 49ers and the Cowboys. The Giants had that culture. The Chiefs now have had that culture. And I think that's what makes a difference. Baltimore's always had the great Ozzie Newsome as the GM. And so that culture was very secure. So I think it really makes a difference. And the teams that can't seem to get going usually have a lot of turnover in the ownership, and the culture doesn't stand for something. So, yeah, picking the Chiefs, that's really a good team to follow.
Yeah, it was really a lucky choice back then. I didn't know it would turn out to be how great they're doing now, but I'm grateful that I'm witnessing history with them. My next question is, I know you talked a little bit about your work with John Madden, but I was hoping you could give us a little insight into what it was like working with him, because I know you worked very closely with him and were very close with him as a person. So the viewers and I would love to know like a tidbit or two about your experience with him.
I think I learned more from him than anybody else in sports. And I was close to Bill Parcells, even Bill Belichick, to the extent he would let you be close to him, and Coach Walsh in San Francisco. So I think I learned from some really greats, and the same with basketball, very close to Rick Pitino, Mike Krzyzewski, Rick Majerus, who you may not know, but he was a brilliant basketball coach who actually his father was a union man in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, but took Rick to the marches in Selma. So you learn a lot, and you will, from lots of people. But John Madden, not only was he a pleasure, he was a riot. He was a modern Mark Twain. I always took the bus with him because I thought, you know, what an education. He was such a philosopher. And like, we'd be riding through Utah, and if he saw lights on in a field, we would stop. It could be girls softball. It could be high school football practice. He didn't care. He asked me if I would take him up to West Point, because he had a lot of respect for Red Blake, the coach. And we went up on the Madden cruiser to an Army practice, not even a game. And you should have seen the players when they looked over and said, oh my God, is that John Madden sitting in the stands? But wow. He would notice everything. Like, Harry, he would say, why are you wearing orange? That's not a Raider color. I remember I had to do a story on the great Division III team, their Union in Ohio. They always win the national championship, and they were called the Purple Raiders. And John sent me on a mission that they had to lose the purple. That's a terrible, it shouldn't go with Raiders. So he just, I remember one time we were riding somewhere on a game. You know, we'd always stop at the same restaurants, like Chewy's in El Paso, when we were taking Route 10. And John looked out the window, and he looked back, and out of nowhere, Harry, he said, dark chocolate. I don't really get it. It's like I got halfway to milk and quit. So it was really a joy of my life. I was one of the five people asked to speak at his memorial. So it was profound knowing him.
Wow. Thank you so much for that. This may be a difficult question, as we've already talked about how you've covered in your long-spanning career so many events, but I was wondering if you can pinpoint one specific memory from your broadcasting career that really sticks with you, or it was your favorite or something like that.
Well, my favorite event of the year is the Final Four. I think nothing delivers on its promise more than the Final Four. And this past one that we just...
It was crazy.
It was crazy. And that was my 40th Final Four. So I've seen them all. And, you know, sometimes they were runaway finals. They weren't close. But the semis in this one was close, where Cooper Flagg, you know, had a chance to win it. Everyone talked about Duke all year. You know, he banged it off the front. I think he went off... I think he had the wrong leg or something. He had something goofy going on there, because I saw him in person a few times, and just a beautiful, he plays beautiful basketball, as does Duke. But then that was a crazy ending. And then there was Kelvin Sampson, you know, he's almost 70 years old, and you thought he was going to come back and win it. And it ended with the kid from Australia at Florida, like swimming on the floor with the ball. So yeah. It was just so dramatic. And then I love the Final Four. But I think that I like the conference championships in the NFL better than the Super Bowl, because I like it when it's in someone's hometown. It's not quite as corporate. Mm-hmm. Although I've been on the field for quite a few dramatic Super Bowls. I was on the field when the Patriots won their first, and that was shortly after 9/11. And that's when Robert Kraft said to everyone, today we are all patriots. But wow. I would say the most interesting, profound for me, my dad grew up in Amsterdam. We were not Jewish, but they were all starving. He grew up under the Nazis. Nazis invaded Rotterdam in 40, liberated Holland in 45. And so I was really... in awe when CBS sent me to the fall of the Berlin Wall. And it just was one of those reminders about freedom isn't free. And it was, I chipped off pieces of the wall for all my friends to take home. It happened in October of 89. And just really to be there to witness one of the great stories in, you know, the last 200 years.
Wow, thanks for sharing. My next question is, this is where I want to bring up Tracy. I know you've inspired countless women to join the industry, or to try out the industry of sports journalism, and notably Tracy Wolfson, who I was fortunate enough to interview on a previous episode of this show. But what advice do you have for the next generation of female sportscasters? Like, what would you tell them is the most important thing that you've learned over the years?
Well, that's great. I've learned a few things, and a lot of them are already off and running. You know, they're doing great. But yeah, Tracy notably, she goes in and out of a lot of sports, makes it look easy. And, you know, the great Charles Osgood said about television, the secret was you're like the duck on the pond. You appear easily on the surface, but you're paddling furiously underneath. And that's what you have to do. You have to project calm and knowledge. And I think to do that, there are three non-negotiables. Number one, we talked about you have to have passion, because if you don't have passion, then you'll resent someone else is making more money or someone else gets an assignment. So what I tried to do, I tried to make every at-bat a quality at-bat. It didn't matter if I was covering, I mean, I covered indoor box lacrosse. I covered, oh my gosh, hang gliding, quite a few, head of the Charles, the great rowing event. I mean, it wasn't all just Wimbledon, the Super Bowl, the Final Four, but I tried to bring that passion to every assignment that I had. And the second is knowledge. We talked about that too. Knowledge gives you confidence. So that when I went from the Boston Globe to CBS, I went from the highest level of print to the highest level of television. But I said my only caveat was that everything that came out of my mouth would be that I had written or I thought, because I felt I had 10 years in print on deadline covering every sport. So you know, if I didn't like what a cowboy linebacker was doing or a chief linebacker, I was comfortable that I could say it and I could own it. So I think knowledge is really helpful. And the way you get that is you turn down the sound on the TV and you call the game yourself. What do you see? Not what does Jim Nance or me or Tracy or Tony Romo tell you? What do you see? So that would be the second. And the third would be you have to have the understanding that it's a Ferris wheel, and the Ferris wheel of your career goes up and the Ferris wheel comes down. And you have to have the stamina to stick through both those, meet both those imposters just the same, as Rudyard Kipling taught us in If.
Wow, thank you so much. That's very inspiring. I try to do that myself, call the games myself for practice, and it's a lot of the time I say it to my dad right before Nance says it. Like I say, I'm thinking the exact thing he's about to say. So I feel like that's a good sign. But that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for being here with me today, Leslie. And as always, thank you for tuning in to Harry's Take. What's your take?
Well, my take, Harry, is when you get down here to the University of Miami, I live in Miami, we're going to go over stuff.
Oh, you bet. That'll be great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Harry.